Hey guys, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. I'm your host, Lacey Dunn, registered dietitian, here to spread the scientific knowledge in the worlds of fitness and nutrition. Today's episode is for you ladies. We are going to talk about hormones, fertility, PCOS, how to get your period back, and more. So get ready, get excited, and I'm sorry, gentlemen. Hey y'all, today I have Lisa Hendrickson Jack. She is an incredible lady right now. Guys, she is a certified fertility awareness educator, and as I told you, a holistic reproductive health practitioner. I'm so stoked to have her here, have her education, her knowledge. And Lisa, thank you so much for taking your time to come on my podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Lacey. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yay. Okay. Well, do you mind telling my listeners a little bit about who you are and your background and what essentially got you started in this field?
Yes, absolutely. So I specialize in fertility, menstrual cycle health, fertility awareness, cycle charting. That is my main focus. And it's really interesting. I mean, I discovered fertility awareness charting nearly 20 years ago when I was about 19 years old. So I was that woman who, like, when everyone else was going on birth control, you know, when they needed contraception, I was a little bit skeptical of the hormones. I had had some experiences with painful periods. And, you know, when I went on the pill, the periods would be great. But then I, you know, quote unquote periods, which I'm sure we'll talk about because they're not real periods mm-hmm. when you're on the pill. But as soon as I would go off, my periods would come back like just as painful, sometimes more. And so I had that sense that it wasn't really fixing anything. And, you know, I have some family histories. Some women in my family had trouble getting pregnant and staying pregnant and those types of things. And so I was always really skeptical of messing with the hardware, I guess you could say. So I discovered fertility awareness at a really young age. I was just really excited that to learn that I wasn't fertile every single day. So from a, you know, scientific standpoint, there's only 6 days of the menstrual cycle where pregnancy is possible, which is very different to what most of us are taught about our cycles.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that was my first kind of like, wow, this is amazing. And I was using it for birth control. But, you know, I discovered quite quickly that the menstrual cycle is about more than just reproduction. Your menstrual cycle reflects back to you the status of your health. And when you Correct. Pay attention to it, you can actually get information about that. So that's really what drew me in. I began teaching years ago in my early 20s. I took a course and was teaching fertility awareness back then. And then as I got older, the reason that I continue to do it now and kind of what got me back into it is that in my 30s, like everyone starts having kids. And I realized that the majority, pretty much all of the women in my life, really didn't know about the menstrual cycle, didn't know how to time sex for a pregnancy, didn't know how to identify ovulation. And so many women I saw struggling to conceive, and I really felt compelled to share. So that's when I started the podcast. And, you know, now that I've written the book, so it's very much me trying to spread awareness about this important topic with women.
No, I absolutely love that. And it's a problem that from us going as children to adolescents to being grown-ups, like, we don't understand. Many women do not understand the menstrual cycle. And I think that's a problem and it needs to be fixed. So I beyond appreciate you being a part of that movement, of the fertility movement.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where we can keep, because the thing I hear the most from women who discover the podcast and kind of, you know, get in touch with my work and everything is that, you know, why didn't anybody tell me this? Why didn't I learn this in junior high school? So initially it's so exciting. It's like, wow, this is amazing. But then it's kind of like, man, I'm kind of pissed off. Like,
yeah, exactly.
how am I like 25, 30, 42 and just discovering this now? So instead of waiting for some magical, you know, governmental policy person to to change the educational system, you just got to take matters into your own hands. And mm-hmm. so that's basically what, you know, what I've been doing and what I encourage women to do when they discover this important information.
No, I beyond love that. And I'm in the field of nutrition, so I so understand you can't wait for the government to do anything.
You'll be waiting a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so why don't we first tell my listeners what is fertility awareness and why it's important?
Absolutely. Fertility awareness is a basic understanding of your menstrual cycle. And so I think to start off, a little bit of myth busting is helpful. Yes. So what we're typically taught about the menstrual cycle is that it's just your period, right? Like you just bleed and then nothing else happens. And then a little ways down the road, you bleed again. So we're really not taught anything about what happens in between. Mm-hmm. So a true menstrual period is what happens about 12 to 14 days after ovulation. So that's kind of the first part. We're taught about our periods, but ovulation is actually the main event. And mm-hmm. without ovulation, you can't have a true menstrual period. And so fertility awareness, what it does is it teaches you what's actually happening between periods. So, you know, you have your period and then what happens is your body starts gearing up towards ovulation. So this is in a natural cycle when you are not on hormonal birth control, when your body's kind of just doing its thing. So as you gear up towards ovulation, your ovaries produce increasing amounts of estrogen. Eventually you ovulate. And as you approach ovulation, you actually produce cervical mucus. So one of the guests who I interviewed on my podcast, Nora Pope, she calls it white flow, which I love. So you have your red flow and your white flow. And I think it's a really interesting way to think about it because as a educator myself, one of the things that in my own field, like what we want women to know about, we want women to know about their mucus. So your mucus is tied to fertility. So for any woman who's listening, that's like, what the heck is she talking about? You know, if you've ever noticed secretion, so it can look kind of clear and stretchy like raw egg whites. It can also look lotiony, so kind of like you have white, creamy white hand lotion between your fingers, and you produce that as you approach ovulation, and that is a sign of fertility. That is what keeps the sperm alive and it does all these great things, but that's associated with your fertility. And then after ovulation, your mucus dries up. And then you have your period about 12 to 14 days after. So by paying attention to the main fertile signs, so cervical mucus, and then also your basal body temperature. So every day when you wake up, you know, your body's at a resting state after you've had a full night's sleep. And it's really neat because if you chart your temperatures every morning after ovulation, those temperatures rise and stay high. So you can actually track in retrospect when you've ovulated based on your temperatures. So cervical mucus, basal body temperature, and then your cervical position actually changes as well. So when you track these three signs, that's the essence of fertility awareness. And then you can choose if you want to use it. So some women want to avoid pregnancy. They're not into the hormones and they want an effective method of birth control. So some women track these signs to avoid pregnancy. So you avoid on the days where you have your mucus. Some women obviously want to try to conceive. And so identifying these signs, it helps you know when in your cycle you're ovulating. And that is really important when you're trying to get pregnant. And then other women, you know, not all women are going to want to use this necessarily as their primary birth control, but all women have the right to know how this works so that they can then maybe just use that information for general health and just kind of keeping track of how their cycles interact with different things that are happening in their lives.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for describing that. Two things, I think. One, women, they need to at least try fertility awareness at one point in their lives just so they can really empower themselves as women. I think it's beyond empowering to know what's going on in your cycle. And number two, we need to make sure that we know, is this a real cycle? Is this an ovulatory cycle? Are we even ovulating? Because as you said, it's not a real cycle if you aren't ovulating. So in regards to the body temperatures, can you describe, you know, essentially the tiny bits of change and essentially how, if that's a 2-day, if that's a 3-day, what's going on there?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So a basal body, your temperature is a measure of your resting metabolism. And so it's really neat. If you think about it, your body just resets. So it's kind of like the lowest amount of energy that your body would use. So typically if you go to sleep and you are sleeping for about 5 hours or more, then your body's back at this resting state. And so, you know, a lot of women will ask me, well, what kind of thermometer do I need? So you need a thermometer that measures to at least a tenth of a degree. So nowadays there's so many thermometers you can get to 2 decimal points, like to 1/100th of a degree. Mm-hmm. But the minimum is like, say, 98.1. for example. And what happens is in your pre-ovulatory phase, like no woman is ever going to have it where her temperature is exactly the same every day. So there's a little bit of fluctuation day to day. And the reason why your temperature increases is because of hormonal changes specifically. So as you approach ovulation, you produce estrogen in increasing amounts. And eventually your estrogen hits a peak, and that is what actually triggers ovulation to happen. So once your estrogen hits this peak, your pituitary, like it's all, like I could go into all the details.
So complex.
But let's just say estrogen peaks, and then that triggers your ovaries, like your pituitary releases some luteinizing hormone, and that triggers ovulation. So once you ovulate, your ovary physically changes, and then it develops what's called the corpus luteum. So basically, your ovary contains these temporary endocrine glands because it's literally your ovaries that are making these hormones. And so after ovulation, your progesterone surges. It just really, you don't really produce significant amounts of progesterone in your cycle until you ovulate. Correct. So it's because of this huge influx of progesterone that is what actually changes your metabolism in this really measurable way. So for anyone who's kind of like a science nerd like I am, I thought it was the coolest thing ever, because then you're tracking, whether you're tracking on paper like I was, like when I first started when there were no apps, but now there's all these really cool apps. You can just plug in the data and you can actually see. So typically what you'll see is a rise in temperature. Sometimes it kind of creeps, and sometimes it's a little bit higher. But when you take a look at your chart at the end of your cycle, you would see two distinct sets of temperatures. And if you had it on a piece of paper, you would actually be able to put a ruler on that piece of paper and draw a line. And the pre-ovulatory temps would be under, and the post-ovulatory temps would be over. So it's this very visual, very physical change that happens in your body that's quantifiable. So it's really neat because it's like it makes it legit, right? Because you have this data and it changes. It's a very consistent pattern. So if you, for example, were to chart your cycles for 6 months or a year, you're going to just, as long as you're ovulating, you're going to keep seeing this pattern.
I love that. I like to call it the egg explosion days.
Love it.
It's like, yes, there's an explosion.
And there literally is, because your ovary literally bursts open.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Thank you. Okay, so we've described fertility awareness. Now let's talk a little bit about why birth control is an issue.
Well, I think a great place to start in terms of like what's the problem with birth control is to have just an understanding of what it's actually doing in the body. So, hormonal birth control is very effective in preventing pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And it's because there are three main modes of action. So three main ways that it, you know, prevents it. So not all hormonal birth control completely, or not all methods completely suppress ovulation, but all hormonal methods do affect your hormones and your ovulation to some degree. So for example, like the pill, the patch, the ring, those are all combined contraceptives. So they contain synthetic versions of estrogen and synthetic versions of progesterone. Mm-hmm. And so those methods, primarily, they do suppress ovulation. So in order for you to ovulate, your hypothalamic, pituitary, ovarian axis has to be working. Like your brain and your ovaries have to be able to have conversations. Mm-hmm. And so the pill interrupts that conversation, so you don't really ovulate. There's a small percentage of women who may ovulate, but you're not ovulating regularly and normally. Mm-hmm. So they stop ovulation, suppress it. Now, you'll remember me saying that the ovaries are where your hormones are produced. So if you're not ovulating, you're not producing significant amounts of your natural estrogen and your natural progesterone. And it also suppresses your natural testosterone that's produced in the ovaries. So I think that's helpful to keep in mind. So often as women, you may have heard this too. When I was younger, they used to say, oh, the pill is like your body thinks it's pregnant. But if you were to measure the natural hormone levels of a woman who is on hormonal birth control, it wouldn't match. Like when you're pregnant, you're producing huge amounts of estrogen.
Correct.
And progesterone.
Yeah.
But when you're, when you're in menopause, you're not. So it's actually more closely like the state of menopause, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the ovulation, they also interfere with implantation. So the hormonal birth control, it prevents your uterine lining from ever fully developing. So your uterine lining then is quite thin. So even if an egg did go through, if you did ovulate, it has nowhere to implant. And then the third part is that it actually prevents your cervix from making fertile quality cervical mucus. So there's these three main points. So right away, if you think about what it's doing, it's disrupting the normal function of your endocrine system. So we talk about endocrine disruptors a lot now. It's like big, right? Like, you know, clean up your routine and do, you know, go for natural products and go for non-scented and things like that. And I think a lot of women find themselves in that trap where they're getting rid of certain products and eating hormone-free meat. We all have this sense of like, okay, this stuff could be messing with my hormones, mm-hmm. but you don't think of hormonal birth control as an endocrine disruptor.
Right, right. You think of it as the help and the fix.
Yeah, when the only like the re- so in order for it to work, in order for it to do its function, which is to prevent you from getting pregnant, it has to disrupt the endocrine system. So it takes a perfectly natural and normal and healthy process, which is your normal ovulatory function, the normal hormone production that happens throughout your cycle, and it really stops that. So the pill is like the A-bomb of endocrine disruptors.
Exactly. And there's some gentlemen who listen to this podcast, but ladies, if you want to take birth control, that is okay. That is on you. That is your decision. Some people don't want a chance getting pregnant, but it is important to know what the difference is in regards to progestins versus progesterone, estrogen versus synthetic forms of estrogen, and just knowing that the pill is not actually regulating your cycles, it's removing the regulation of your natural cycles. And it does lead to nutrient depletions such as zinc, magnesium, B6. These are just a few. So just something to keep in mind. So I wanted to next dive into something very exciting that Lisa has going on. She is releasing a book coming up very soon, and I'm stoked, and I definitely plan on purchasing this for myself and my family. That's for sure. I actually have a sister with PCOS, so she needs this. So do you mind telling me a little bit about your book, and we can dive into essentially what it's going to contain and its information?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that, first of all. So the book is The Fifth Vital Sign. And I've been working on this book for a while, and it's essentially the culmination of my trajectory. So it talks a lot about fertility awareness and what we were talking about in terms of understanding the cycle. But it also really focuses on the importance of the menstrual cycle for overall health. So what we were just talking about with regards to the pill and the effects, it's really the tip of the iceberg. So I have two chapters in the book that focus specifically on the pill. One of the chapters is specifically like the side effects, which there are many. Mm-hmm. And we can get into more of those if you like. And also the second chapter specifically on the pill is about coming off the pill and kind of having that awareness of like, what are some of the effects that it has on fertility? So it's a huge topic. I mean, the purpose of the book is to really fill in that gap that we don't have in our education system about how the menstrual cycle works and why it's important. Because as you know, a lot of women are left with the impression that it only really matters when I'm trying to get pregnant. Like I don't nearly need to ovulate unless I'm trying to conceive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And I think the problem too is women are thinking, you know, I can just come off the pill whenever I'm ready to have kids and it's not going to be an issue. And that's not the case. People don't realize how detrimental it can be on both your gut, your thyroid, your whole entire HPA axis. So it can really cause some issues in regards to fertility, and women need to be aware of this.
Well, and we can talk a little bit about that because, I mean, it's so – what's interesting about it, I mean – we all know that some women come off of hormonal birth control and conceive right away. And we know some women conceive while on it. So there's no kind of broad statement that we can say this mm-hmm. is going to happen to every woman or this is not. But what the research shows us is that when you take hormonal birth control, there is a temporary period of subfertility. So there's quite literally in the research, there's a transition period of cycle abnormality, irregularity, and subfertility. And so what's interesting is that as I was taking a look through the different research papers, so for example, if you take the pill, there was one study that showed that for women who didn't take hormonal birth control at all, on average, when they started to try, so these are women who were using condoms, right? But when they started to try for a baby, it would take an average of about 4 months, which makes sense because the average, like, you got a 25% chance of conceiving in any given cycle if you're healthy. Mm-hmm. But the women who came off of the pill, it took an average of 8 months. And these were long-term, like use the pill for 2 or more years. So on average, it took them twice as long to get pregnant. And then, I mean, there's other types of birth control, like the shot was had the longest, like an average of 18 months. So the research really shows that there's this kind of temporary period of subfertility. But when the researchers talk about it, what they say is, well, because it's temporary, it's kind of like a non-issue. And so the reason that I think this is important, especially for women who are planning ahead. So maybe, you know, we have women listening and they're not trying to conceive right now, but they know maybe a year out or 2 years or even 6 months from now, they're going to want to start trying. So, you know, we know, like what I can say from experience and from working with women is that when you come off the pill, especially in this world that we live in, we're taught that you can get pregnant on any single day of your cycle. And you're basically taught that it's a given that you're going to get pregnant. And then you end up spending the majority of your adult life actively preventing pregnancy. So you kind of think that you're going to get pregnant immediately. So imagine, like, the first month you're pretty cool, right? The first month of trying. But by the second month, you're already freaking out a little. By 6 months, when your fertility is starting to return back to normal, you might already be at the fertility clinic. So if you don't know about this actual transition phase that your body goes through, and you don't plan ahead for it, and you don't come off of the pill with at least a little bit of buffer period to give your body a chance to restore, and you mentioned nutrient depletions and things like that. Like, if you don't give your body a chance to restore, to replenish those for your cycle to normalize a little bit, then by the time your cycles have normalized, you've already gone through 3 rounds of Clomid and are on the way to get IVF.
Yeah. And I've seen the amount of IVF, and there's nothing wrong with IVF, but I've just seen it skyrocket in the past 10 years with how many women have to do it to get pregnant.
Well, and again, like, so I don't want to say, I just want to clarify.
And it's not just birth control, that's for sure.
No, absolutely. Like, there's a lot of things going on. But I would say this isn't to say, like, no one should use the pill. I've used the pill. I used it when I was a teenager because I had painful periods. So for me, this is about informed consent. Mm-hmm. I just think that it's really important for us to have a sense of, like, okay, this is not medication that you use once or twice a month. When women go on hormonal birth control, they're on it for, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I've worked with so many women who've been on it for 20 years. And so if you're going to take a medication for, you know, 2 decades straight, it's really important for you to know what the side effects are. So at least you know what they are and you can plan for them. You can be aware of them and to know how it could affect your fertility. There's no research that shows that the pill has like a negative lasting effect on your fertility, but this temporary period of subfertility, women need to know that so that they can plan accordingly and incorporate that time frame into their calendars, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very important. And it's very empowering to know what's going to happen to your body. Do you mind just going briefly into the side effects?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that I mentioned was the suppressed hormone production. And so I think it's really important to know that, you know, because I talk about the pill a lot, as you know, because you listen to the podcast. And sometimes I get flack because I'm not necessarily presenting women who had, quote unquote, no side effects. So I'll often hear women say, I was on it for years, I loved it, and I didn't have any side effects. Mm-hmm. So the side effects that we're talking about here, these are physiological things that happen to every woman who takes them, regardless of whether or not, like, they might affect you differently. But so, for example, the testosterone, the pill lowers testosterone significantly. You know, 25 to 50% less testosterone is like free testosterone is circulating in your body. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways is by shutting down ovarian production. But one of the other ways is by increasing a protein called sex hormone binding globulin. So I like to think of this protein as, like, if you think about those like iron filings and magnet situations. Mm-hmm. So it's like the magnet, and your testosterone is the filings. So sex hormone binding globulin binds to your testosterone so that it's not available to your cells.
Gotcha.
When you go on the pill, your SHBG increases by anywhere from 200 to 400%. So there's multiple ways that the pill is suppressing testosterone. Now, that has a lot of negative effects, as you can imagine. One of the effects is on specifically related to sexual side effects. So low testosterone is associated with mood, so it can contribute to kind of feelings of depression, things like that. Mm-hmm. But also low libido, painful sex. So specifically, there's studies that have shown, there's one study in particular where they measured the vaginal tissue. So they measured the actual volume of your clitoris of the participants. And on average, after 3 months of use, these women had an average decrease of 20% of the volume of the clitoris. So like, is that on the package that it could shrink your clitoris? And also the tissues specifically around the vaginal opening thin. So the actual thickness of those tissues decrease.
Wow.
And those, right? So it's and this is in the scientific literature. And so this is because these tissues, our sexual organs, are highly sensitive to testosterone. So when you have such a significant drop in that hormone, it can have this effect. So not all women experience painful sex and all of those sexual side effects, but there's a couple things going on there. You know, there is a percentage of women that do and actually develop painful sex, decreased ability to orgasm. In the study, some of the women reported that they still did orgasm, but the orgasms they experienced weren't as intense. And as you know, as a woman, if you have issues orgasming with your partner or you're experiencing painful sex, especially if you didn't know that it could be related to hormonal birth control, I mean, you're not, the first thing that you're going to think is that there's something wrong with you.
Correct.
You might end up in therapy.
Yeah, that's not fun.
Horrible, right? But so for me, this is all about informed consent. Because then at least if you were on it and you knew that this was one of the possible side effects, and if you did experience a little bit of pain or a little bit of a decreased libido or things like that, you could then ask the question, I wonder if this could be related to my birth control, mm-hmm. and then go off of it and see if it improves. And if it doesn't, then you have your answer. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing I'll mention in terms of side effects is depression and anxiety. And so I think that's huge and really important to mention. So in addition to the lower testosterone, and that could be related to depression, you mentioned nutrient depletion. So vitamin B6 in particular is depleted by the pill in orders of magnitude. Like it's the most kind of, or I suppose you could say it's drained the most.
Yeah, correct.
So when they try to replenish it, in order to stabilize the vitamin B6, a woman has to be given nearly 40 times the RDA, per day. In order to stabilize that. So that is related to mood, depression, anxiety, because, you know, in the process of our bodies making serotonin, vitamin B6 is required. So vitamin B6 is required for our bodies to make tryptophan, which is a precursor to serotonin. And that's a neurotransmitter that is associated with feelings of well-being, things like that. So for some women, this is very pronounced effect where it's kind of related to this nutrient deficiency that interferes with our neurotransmitters that makes us more likely to experience feelings of depression, low mood, and possibly even low energy. So again, not all women necessarily go on the pill and like have no libido and feel depressed, but there's a significant percentage of women that do have those experiences and maybe are not like, so they go to their doctor and maybe the doctor is prescribing them antidepressants instead of taking them off the hormones for a little while to see if that could be the cause.
Wow. And that's something that's very important to keep in mind, too, because sadly, many people do deal with anxiety and depression. And you would want to know if the birth control was contributing to those issues. I wouldn't wish anxiety on anybody. I have dealt with anxiety my whole entire life, and I could not wish those two issues on anybody. So just being aware is very important.
Well, and can I mention one other thing about the anxiety?
Yes.
So I've interviewed a number of women who, you know, shared with me that they had different side effects and different experiences. And one of the things that I found really interesting was that not all women then develop, say, anxiety. Like, so some women have full-on panic attacks and it's related to their hormonal birth control use, but not all women necessarily have those effects right away. So I interviewed a number of women who took the pill for years and they were totally fine. And then maybe like 8 years, 10 years. And then all of a sudden they started having panic attacks. These nutrient depletions, it's kind of like a slow steady. So the longer that you use it, the more it can be exacerbated. So it's definitely a good idea to actually, you know, take a multivitamin, take B complex, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to fully fix the problem because if you have a hole in a bucket, like keep pouring in water, right? As opposed to fixing the hole. But at the same time, like mitigating is also good. But with that being said, I think it's just helpful for women to know that sometimes these side effects, it doesn't show up immediately. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time and they show up later, which can make you even less likely to put two and two together.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the side effects. Let's dive a little bit into, because I don't want to reveal everything in your book, of course, but let's dive into steps that you can take to restore healthy hormones coming off the pill.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I feel like, I mean, the first thing to do is to recognize that there is going to be that period of transition. So having that knowledge and knowing that it could take a little bit of time for your menstrual cycle to normalize is helpful because it kind of takes that pressure off. So many women come off the pill and sometimes, you know, the period comes back right away. You will get that withdrawal bleed. So when I mean period, it's kind of like the next one. But other times it can take a couple of months for it to come back. So I think the first thing is to recognize that. On average, it takes anywhere from 9 to 12 cycles before all of your parameters from the, you know, period, ovulation, all of the different phases of the cycle for those to fully normalize. Mm-hmm. So know that, I think, is the first thing. Addressing the nutrient deficiencies is really important. So as you mentioned, B vitamins are kind of on the top of that list of nutrient depletion, vitamin B12, B6, folate. Those are known to be depleted, especially with long-term use. So really taking steps to address that. So that might look like supplementation. It might look like incorporating foods that are rich in these nutrients, just to make sure that you're addressing that. Zinc, the zinc copper balance is known to be affected by hormonal birth control. So women end up higher in copper and lower in zinc.
Yeah, copper toxicity.
Yeah, which is interesting because you would think, oh, that must be related to the copper IUD, but it's actually related to hormonal birth control because of the way that the kind of mineral balance is disrupted.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So really, I mean, that's kind of step one. And that can be done in a number of ways. Like I said, supplementation, you can work with a nutritionist, you can do some testing to kind of find out where your levels are at. And also you can incorporate foods that are rich in those nutrients. And so I'm one to always talk about liver and organ meats because those foods contain the highest density of a lot of the nutrients that we need to reestablish proper menstrual cycle function, including B vitamins like folate and B6 and B12, iron, vitamin A, zinc. So I think, but of course, there's lots of foods that contain those nutrients as well.
Yeah, they're recommended and I'm always like, oh, they're recommended, but I could never eat them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's most people, I think these days, most of us didn't necessarily grow up eating them. I know I grew up eating organ meats. I have a West Indian background. So, but there's lots of different ways to incorporate them. So if you're open to the idea, but really can't picture eating them ever, I mean, desiccated liver, they sell them in different things. So, but that's one thing to do. I think overall, it's a really great time to pay attention to some of those lifestyle factors. Mm-hmm. So things that you wouldn't necessarily think would make a huge impact on your menstrual cycle, but actually do. So I mentioned xenoestrogens and the chemicals and things like that. So xenoestrogen, that's a word to describe chemicals that kind of look similar to your hormones, so that when your body is exposed to them, they have hormonal effects. So anything that is scented, beauty products, all of the kind of standard beauty products geared to women, all of the cleaning products that have scents and all those types of things. One of the first things to do is kind of look in your house and kind of see, just take stock of what you have. And for many women, it's really overwhelming. But many women find that by addressing that, looking at some of those different products and really over time, usually it takes 3 to 6 months. So this is not something you're going to do like mm-hmm. right away. But reducing those, a lot of women find that their cycles improve. So whether that's that they were getting pain and heavy periods and things like that, like I can't promise you that, you know, getting rid of your dish soap is going to totally fix your period. But a lot of women find that by gradually reducing those, they do see improvements in their cycles because those chemicals, they do disrupt the endocrine system and they do throw off your hormone balance.
Yeah, and they also can, you know, be detrimental sometimes to the liver as well.
Absolutely. Well, your liver is constantly working all the time anyways. So you produce hormones every day. Your liver is filtering those, breaking them down and getting. So even if you had no chemical exposure, your liver would still be working all day. So add those additional chemicals to the mix and basically your liver just has way more work to do. So a lot of people would think like, okay, if I want to detoxify my liver, I have to do something, I have to take something, I have to drink something. But the first step to detoxifying your liver is actually to stop bombarding it with chemicals.
Yeah, the best thing you can do. You don't need a detox. You do need to be kind to your liver, eat a bunch of fruits and vegetables. I'm a firm believer in N-acetylcysteine being fabulous, not only for liver health, but boosting glutathione levels and immunity. And then something I do want to mention too for people in regards to getting your cycle back is making sure you're feeding your body enough, with enough calories, enough carbohydrates, enough fat, and of course always protein, but just making sure you're feeding your body in order to regulate your hormones and have a healthy HPA axis. So we really want to make sure we don't have any thyroid disorders as well going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because hormonal birth control can there's just so many different things that can show up. It's not uncommon for women to have a bit of a suppressed thyroid for a couple mm-hmm. of months post birth control. And that could look in a couple of different ways. I mean, the cycle itself is a bit disrupted, so that's pretty commonplace. And that even the temperatures can be a little bit lower and things like that. So I think it's helpful to know that it doesn't necessarily mean right off the bat that you're hypothyroid. You may have to support your thyroid in other ways, but it could be like a temporary state because of the hormonal birth control. So it's complex. I mean, as women, we always want that like quick fix and like to know what to do and like the supplement mm-hmm. to take to make everything better. But this phase is really the post-pill phase. It's really connecting you back to your cycles and giving yourself some time to kind of see where the dust settles. So at about, say, the 9 to 12 month mark, I feel like you would have more of a sense of like what's really going on. If you see some of those problems persisting, then you have that sense that, okay, this is more than just post-birth control. Maybe I need to actually like look into this further. Because if you do have issues with your thyroid, or if you do have significant issues with gut health, so hormonal birth control is also associated with gut dysbiosis, like so to some degree kind of altering your natural flora. Mm-hmm. So focusing on improving that. But I've worked with a lot of women that have gut issues, whether it's IBS or a small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or other types of issues. And gut issues are quite complex and often take a bit of time. And it's often not as simple, if you have issues specifically, it's often not as simple as, oh, just eat some fermented foods. Because in some cases, that makes it worse for some women.
Yeah, exactly. And I've talked in my other podcasts as well about you don't want to add a probiotic to dysbiosis. You don't want to add a probiotic to SIBO. You're just going to explode the issue. So there's definitely, in regards to gut health, adrenal health, all this stuff, you really have to make sure that you're working with a practitioner and not self-diagnosing, not taking all the supplements, because it's not about taking more. It's just about finding the root and fixing the root issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, and something, of course, is that if you – because, you know, we talked about nutrient depletion and how it's so important to replenish those nutrients. If you do have a significant gut health issue, you can be eating all of the food and taking all of the supplements. But if you're not absorbing it, of this gut issue, So it can be pretty complex. But I would say in the general sense, if you're looking to improve your cycles, looking at your diet, like you said, making sure you're eating enough food. I mean, what we're trying to do is stabilize your hormones and really boost your natural hormone production. So, vitamin A is essential for hormone production. Healthy saturated fats, cholesterol is a precursor to all of your steroid hormones. So estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, cortisol, in order to kind of get all those hormones in balance, eating enough fat can play a really important role in making sure that those are together. And I mean, I like to talk about a lot of simple lifestyle factors as well that can improve menstrual cycle health overall, because often we discount the importance of something as simple as reducing how much coffee you drink, you know, paying attention to your alcohol consumption. The research is quite clear that, you know, consistent, it's really unfortunate. I know I hate taking away people's coffee, and I'm not saying to take it away, but if you have issues with your cycle, so let's say you came off of birth control, it's been several months and you're noticing some trends. Maybe you're noticing that your ovulation is delayed, so your cycles are still on the longer side, or maybe you're noticing that your luteal phase, so the second half of your cycle, is still really short. So we would expect about 2 weeks after ovulation for you to have your period. But if your luteal phase is only, say, 9 days or 10 days, that's on the short side. And that can indicate that your progesterone levels aren't high enough to really mm-hmm. sustain that. So if you're if you have those kind of experiences, your cycle isn't where you want it to be, you see that there's these persistent trends that would indicate that you know, outside of the normal parameters, that's when you want to start asking questions about these lifestyle pieces. So it's not to say everyone shouldn't do this or everyone should do that, but mm-hmm. if you're concerned, caffeine, alcohol, sleep, look at your exercise. Exercise, you can use your cycle as a great barometer for exercise. So if you start a new exercise routine and you're like working out 5 days a week, like 2 hours a day, and all of a sudden your luteal phase is super short and, you know, you're getting spotting when you didn't have it before, that's a sign that maybe you have to either pull back or modify.
Yeah. Yeah. Stress plays a major role in stealing your hormones away.
Absolutely. So there's so much. I could just go on, but I'll throw it back to you.
Okay. So one last question, I guess I have, and it just ran away from me. Gosh. Oh yeah. I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on utilizing the Dutch test. And I know, you know, ladies, just getting off birth control and then going to take your hormone tests is not the smart thing to do. You got to give it time. We have discussed that. But what are your thoughts in regards to utilizing the Dutch test with fertility awareness method when people are not restoring their back to their normal cycles in that 9 to 10 month period after?
Mm-hmm. I think it can be really helpful. I feel like what you said can't be underscored. If you're charting your cycles, especially if you've been charting for a while and you kind of have a sense of what it means when your ovulation is delayed, or like if you have this kind of that sense of, because your menstrual cycle is essentially a printout of what's happening hormonally. Mm-hmm. So it gives you, it's really cool. It's like a home version of the Dutch test, right? It clearly doesn't give you like as much information specifically, but it does give you this general sense. So if you run and take the Dutch test like the week after you came off the pill, it's going to confirm that your hormones are a hot mess.
It's like a waste of $600, people.
Yeah. So, I mean, what a good use of it would kind of be in combination. So, mm-hmm. Once you know about the transition phase, you've taken the time to kind of go through that. It kind of sucks because when's my next period going to come back? Why are my cycles so regular? But within those first 9 to 12 cycles, your cycle should start to normalize. And I think that it would be a really helpful thing to do once your cycles have normalized for the most part. But if you have certain things that you're concerned about, and certain, maybe you're having certain symptoms, or maybe there's still just certain signs. So spotting is a good example of that. Irregular cervical mucus patterns is a good example of that. Short luteal phase, delayed ovulation, you know, lower temperatures. There's all kinds of signs of things that fall outside the normal parameters. So if you're at the point where you're past that transition phase, you're still seeing some things that are concerning you, and you really just want some answers because you don't really know why you're seeing it, definitely that would be a good opportunity and point in time to take the Dutch test to get some of those deeper answers as to what's happening hormonally and how your body's utilizing and processing those hormones. But with the Dutch test, as you know, I mean, it's a super complex test that professionals are trained in supporting you with. So it's really important to, if you're considering doing it, also to actually find somebody who can help you to deal with it. If you find out that you're not processing your estrogen well, your estrogen metabolism is really off, then it's really helpful to work with somebody who can actually support you in, you know, opening up that pathway and making sure that you're processing estrogen in the healthier way.
Correct. And one just last thing I want to mention to my listeners is in regards to not utilizing the Dutch test and just going, you know, to your general doctor and having blood levels of like estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, like having blood levels checked. If you don't know where you are in your cycle, then it's not even helpful to even check these levels. And I see a lot of people do this, waste their money, and it's not going to help you, because if you go and you check your levels, you don't know where your cycle is. Well, you can't compare, because it's supposed to be compared by follicular phase, by luteal phase. So you really have to make sure that if you're going to go do that, you know where you are in your cycle.
Well, I'll tack onto that. It's interesting because a woman tagged me in a post today in my Facebook group, I think it was, and her doctor sent her for a progesterone test on day 6 of her cycle. Mm-hmm. And then her progesterone was super low. And she's like, is this a problem? So it's exactly what you're saying. You know, the doctors, for the most part, are trained that the menstrual cycle is always 28 days and that ovulation always happens on day 14. The challenge is that that's not how it works. So most women don't ovulate on day 14 all of the time. So charting your cycle is really helpful for testing, because then you can actually identify where you are. So if you're doing the early tests that are done on, say, day three or something like that, you know, that's fine. So, you know, day three of your cycle. But if you're going for like a mid-luteal, you know, and they're doing it on day 21 of your cycle, but you didn't ovulate until day 20, well, your progesterone is going to show that it's low, but it's supposed to be because you only ovulated yesterday. So I think, and that's, it's a hard conversation to have. I'm sure you've had this experience as well. I've spoken to many women and many of my clients who have gone to the doctor and said, well, I don't ovulate until this day. And they say, well, we're going to do it on day 21. So if they don't even hear you. And sometimes it can be really frustrating to try to explain that to the doctor, because often they're just not really aware of charting or not necessarily thinking it's effective. So the self-advocacy piece is really important.
It's like huge.
Step one is really understanding your cycle and kind of having that sense of what's happening. And once you do, that gives you the ability to advocate for yourself. And unfortunately, sometimes that means going to a different practitioner or really having to kind of stand firm and do what you need to do.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to do that. If your doctor isn't going to work with you, then go elsewhere. You're paying them, and you're putting a lot of money into insurance, so you got to be your own advocate. And I know this is not even closely related to birth control, but I just know that a lot of people deal with thyroid disorders as well, and so many different doctors aren't testing the essential thyroid tests. So just know, guys, you have to make sure that you take care of yourself, your health, be your own advocate.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, there's so much we could talk about, isn't there?
Yeah, I know, right? And it's all intertwined and complex, and I personally, I love it. I'm a firm believer in nutrition. I love nutrition, but in the recent years, I have just been drawn in by the hypothalamic pituitary axis. I'm like, there's so much going on. It's so
confusing. I know. When you mentioned the thyroid, and it's so interesting with charting, because one of the things that I see a lot, and I'm sure you've seen this in different ways as well, you know, a lot of women might have some symptoms and then the tests kind of show normal. And so then it's like, you're fine, but they still have the symptoms. And I've seen a lot of women who, you know, they're fine, right? The tests, all like the three tests that the doctors are willing to do, like your TSH and the free T4, like they're fine. But then the actual chart shows like super low temperatures and they have different symptoms. So again, it's hard. It's not easy advocating for yourself. But never kind of discount your symptoms. You have to trust and believe in your symptoms. Nicole Jardim, I was at an event with her recently, and what she was saying, I think she's the term like medical gaslighting. And yeah, like enough is basically, like, as women, it's enough of the medical gaslighting. Like if I say that I have a pain here, or if I say that this medication I'm having an adverse reaction, or if I say that I'm feeling really tired and I think I have an issue with my thyroid, and the doctor's like, well, no, you don't need to. Like, no, that's like medical gaslighting. We need to start naming it and really just advocating. If the doctor isn't going to do it, yeah, we got to find the next one who's willing to do the test for us.
Yeah, never surrender. And just it absolutely pisses me off when doctors just dismiss something, especially with depression, with fatigue, with I'm seeing fibromyalgia pop in my feet all the time too, and that just pisses me off, the amount of doctors that dismiss fibromyalgia. So just don't surrender. Never surrender. Hold up your little flag and just wave it as you go.
Yeah, stake your territory.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking your time. My one last question is really, it's really fast. It is, what is your favorite part about educating about fertility?
Ooh.
It's a tough one.
I'm thinking, because there's lots of parts I love about it, but I would say my favorite part is really empowering women to make the choices they need to make. Because that's what happens. Education is the first step. But once you know more stuff, all of a sudden you are more empowered. Like, you have more power. So I think my short answer is empowering women to advocate for themselves.
I love that. My saying is, I want to uplift others. And I love that you want to empower others. That's perfection right there.
Thank you. Love it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time and coming on my podcast and sharing your wealth of knowledge. If you could tell my listeners a little bit about where they can find you, if they want to work with you, if they want to go to your blog, and then when your book is coming out, that would be fantastic.
Awesome. Well, the book is, the official release date is January 21st, 2019. And the listeners can actually grab the first chapter for free.
Oh, wow.
Over at the book website. Yeah. So if you're interested in what we were talking about today, you're going to just love it. Because I just went all out. There's like over 1,000 research citations, especially for the science junkies that don't just want to take my word for it. That was really important to me when I was writing this book. There's so much information out there now. And so for any topic that's of interest to you, there's, you know, hundreds of citations that you can dig into if you really want to kind of learn more about it. So you don't have to take my word for anything I say, really. So head over to thefifthvitalsignbook.com. That's all like letters spelled out. And yeah, you can find me. I'm on social. My main site is fertilityfriday.com. My website or my podcast is Fertility Friday. So yeah, I thank you so much for having me, Lacey. It was such a blast chatting with you.
You're so welcome. You guys, everything that she stated will be in the description, so you should be able to easily search it, find it. Make sure you listen to her podcast, you check out her blogs, and you get her book. I am a firm believer in empowering yourself and being your own advocate and really having control of your own life and your own health.
Awesome. Couldn't agree more.
Okay. Well, I hope you have a fabulous day, and thank you so much again. It's been fantastic.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye.
Bye.